Support for WPR comes from National Eagle Center, hosting SOAR Fall Flight. With programs from World Bird Sanctuary and Midwest Peregrine Society, September 21st and 22nd. NationalEagleCenter.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Opioid addiction has become a public health crisis. In fact, just yesterday, the Wisconsin Senate gave final approval to 9 bills aimed at combating that problem. And Governor Walker is saying that he looks forward to signing them.
Making the situation worse, there are new variants of synthetic opioids, which have public health officials scrambling to figure out what they are and just how lethal they are. Since 2012, synthetically manufactured opioids with names like Furanil, fentanyl, and others have played a role in rising overdose deaths here in Wisconsin.
Because some of these drugs have no equivalents among known prescription opioids, public health officials and law enforcement often can't detect them in toxicology tests.
WPR's Scott Gordon is with us now. He's associate editor of WisContext.org, where he's been following the story. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
When we think of this opioid drug problem, I think in my head there's heroin, right, the illegal stuff you inject, and then there's prescription painkillers, one or two kinds of those. As you write, it's way more complicated than that.
Right. It tends to be more of a mix. I mean, just by nature, the supply of something illicit is going to be kind of erratic, and it's going to be a bit impure. And of course, one of the big problems with fentanyl is that it's sort of cut into the heroin supply. And so people will often end up using this kind of unknowingly or unwittingly.
Yeah, talk about the diversity of, you write about synthetic opioids. There are new kinds appearing that that authorities are having a hard time keeping track of.
Right. And some aren't exactly new. Fentanyl and carfentanil are both things that are kind of, they're known quantities, and they've been out there and had some, you know, legitimate use in various contexts for a while. But some of the opioids out there are kind of these novel variations on the chemical structure of fentanyl. And those become a little bit more difficult for people to track if you're, you know, doing toxicology testing after an overdose death, because people don't necessarily know what exactly they're looking for, if it's something that hasn't been around and hasn't really been well documented.
And where are these synthetic opioids coming from? Are we seeing labs like meth labs around the country, around the world? But for these opioids?
Basically, officials in the United States have said that a lot of it is being manufactured in China. But, you know, really, who knows? And that's something where China has said that it would crack down on some of these things. But it's not clear how effective that is. And it's not clear if these things are coming from elsewhere either.
This poses an extra hazard to the users, it sounds like, because with these different types of opioids, the dosage, the strength can really vary from one supply to the next, maybe one dose to the next.
Right. It's kind of unknown how potent some of these things will be if they're not things that have been sort of, you know, developed and controlled in a laboratory setting, or in a setting where there's some kind of documentation or certification going on. And, you know, clearly the people making these novel opioids are good chemists, and they're, you know, creating these chemicals to try and circumvent the laws that, you know, prohibit certain substances specifically. But it does, you're right, it does introduce a whole other aspect of unpredictability into the situation.
I know sometimes when we're talking about drugs and we say numbers like 10 times as powerful or 100 times as powerful, that can be a bit vague. But it sounds like taking a dose of one and a dose of a different thing the next day, it can be orders of magnitude more powerful.
Right. And as I was saying earlier, often these things tend to get mixed together, and that also creates another challenge for people investigating these deaths, which you might have a fairly large quantity in your system of a more conventional, better known drug like heroin, but a much more small quantity of something much more powerful, such as, you know, carfentanil or one of these other synthetic opioids. And it's not really clear just yet that these synthetic opioids are having a huge impact in Wisconsin. There have been a few deaths related to carfentanil and to fentanyl and to some of the more novel ones. But again, it's kind of this wide unknown.
And let's talk about that unknown. You write a lot about the difficulties in tracking these things that, say, a medical examiner and others can have. What kind of problems do we have with even just getting reliable data about how much of the different types of opioids we're seeing?
Well, to start with, when a lab like the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene, which I focus on in a couple of my stories, is doing toxicology testing on an overdose victim, you know, testing their blood or urine or vitreous fluid, they kind of will go in knowing mostly what they're looking for, and that will inform the testing approach. And if you don't know exactly what you're looking for and you know what ballpark you're kind of in, you can do that, but that takes generally some expensive instrumentation that the lab doesn't necessarily have.
And yeah, talk about equipment. Are we equipped as a state, as county and local governments to try to test for these things and watch for them?
Well, I would say no. And the state and, you know, county coroners and medical examiners can access some of that testing by outsourcing it to private labs. But of course, that's expensive. And, you know, in some cases, people have some discretion as to whether they, you know, go for that kind of testing.
Is this, do we only test these various fluids in the case of an overdose death, or do we also test them in non-fatal overdoses?
Well, to be honest, I didn't really look into non-fatal overdoses in my story, but I know that's something that the state and the CDC are trying to get more information on as well.
And talk about the people doing this testing. When there's an overdose death in the county, who's in charge of doing that, and what kind of training do they have?
Well, a lot of smaller counties in Wisconsin don't have, you know, a medical examiner who's an actual doctor. Most counties in Wisconsin have an elected coroner. In some cases, that person works part-time as the coroner. So in a lot of cases, they'll be outsourcing a lot of their work on autopsies and testing to a larger county like Dane County or Fond du Lac County, for example, and or to state labs like the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene and to various private labs.
Scott Gordon is with us from WisConText. We're looking at opioids in Wisconsin, different kinds, more variety of opioids than you might think, and very difficult to track some of them, to get good data on what is out there, what's causing overdose deaths. And let's talk about that a little bit more, Scott. In addition to the technology and the science of detecting a particular kind of drug, how about how it gets recorded so we have usable data from county to county and across the state?
Right. So when someone dies of an overdose, there's obviously a death certificate. There's generally a, you know, coroner's report and a you know, some level of law enforcement investigation and so forth. So there is documentation, but there isn't necessarily a really hard and fast standardized way in which people go through and document every single drug that might be involved. So when these things are all kind of aggregated at the state level, you might not necessarily always get a clear picture of, you know, here's how many overdose deaths involve heroin, here's how many overdose deaths involve carfentanil, and here's how many involved U47700, which is this synthetic thing that's out there. And so they're using kind of this code called the ICD-10 that we'll break down causes and contributing factors of a death into these various categories. And in some cases, a drug kind of will have its own category that indicates it specifically, like heroin. But in the case of other drugs, there is more of a broad category. Like, just there's one that's just basically for synthetic opioids other than methadone. So, you know, all the things involving fentanyl and this array of kind of substances that are similar to it will kind of all be lumped into one category. So, and there's some work going on about this at the state level and at the CDC level to break it down in a more specific way, but that's going to be starting with data from 2016. So if you want to kind of go back and look over the past 5 or 10 years and get some kind of idea of how these things have entered the mix and how they've had an impact on a broader statewide level, you're going to have a really hard time doing that.
And that's drilling down pretty fine there. Even at a wider level, if I understand it right, an overdose might be classified as an accidental poisoning, a suicide, or even a homicide, depending on the situation, depending on which medical examiner or whoever is entering this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing that one of the folks I talked to at the State Department of Health Services talked about is that it is sometimes genuinely hard to understand the intentionality behind a death. You know, whether someone meant to die by suicide or whether someone overdosed unintentionally, you know, or whether it technically qualifies as a homicide because someone was, you know, unwittingly sold something that was too powerful.
How important is getting good data? I mean, it sounds like it might just be bureaucratic record keeping, but how important is it to get better, solid data in an effort to treat this problem?
Well, I mean, as a reporter, I kind of obviously take it as a given that more data is important. But I think at the public policy level, the argument for this is that the better people understand the circumstances of overdose, the better people understand the various, you know, chemicals that are in the mix here, then the better we can craft policies that sort of address these issues and, you know, ultimately prevents the, you know, use of dangerous substances, at least in more cases.
One more complicating factor I wanted to ask about, you mentioned multiple types of drugs, like maybe heroin and a little bit of synthetic opioid in the mix. What about mixing those with alcohol, which I understand is part of the story? Do we have ways to classify opioids and other substances involved in the same overdose?
Yeah, I mean, there's a way to kind of classify the various contributing factors in a death. I think one of the big issues is that if with a code thing like the ICD-10, which I mentioned, you know, it's kind of like the DSM, right, where it's updated over time. And if a new thing comes on the scene, it's not going to adapt overnight to that new information. And so, you know, in a lot of senses, people are kind of constantly playing catch up.
So what you've been pursuing this opioid story in a lot of different angles. Where are you going next with it?
Well, one thing that I'm going to be looking at next is kind of in light of the fact that there have been some more recent deaths in Wisconsin involving chemicals like carfentanil. I'm going to kind of look more into how state and local officials in Wisconsin are dealing with the threat of law enforcement and EMS workers and even lab technicians being exposed to some of this stuff, because there are opioids out there that can be transmitted transdermally or can be really powerful when inhaled in even really small amounts. So that obviously creates a lot of danger for people who not just for people who are intentionally using them, but for people who encounter them in the field as part of their jobs. So and this has been known for a while in kind of the law enforcement community and among EMS workers, but interested to see how people in Wisconsin respond to that problem.
And we'll want to talk with you about that. I wanted to ask a question about how we in the media talk about this opioid problem. I think you had shared with us internally some guidelines from NPR. When I know in our talking about this, we've used the word epidemic when we've talked about opioid. Is that something that you steer clear of, or do you think it's an appropriate word to use?
Well, I think that's appropriate in this case, just given the amount of, you know, of damage that's been done. But of course, I think that in media and in American culture, there, you know, has historically been a tendency toward a bit of hysteria surrounding drugs. So I think it's important to steer clear of that. But, you know, also don't discount the problem when it's really hurting people. And, you know, when it's a legitimate public health problem. One guide that I would look to for anyone either consuming or writing news about this is the On the Media Breaking News Handbook of Drug Edition, which is something that they recently published. And it's part of a kind of a running series they're doing of how to kind of consume news stories about breaking issues that I think is really fantastic and really clarifying.
We'll leave it there for now. Scott, thanks as always.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Scott Gordon. He's associate editor of wiscontext.org. He joined us to talk about synthetic opioids that are a factor in a rising number of opioid drug overdose deaths in Wisconsin. You can find a link to his WisContext piece on the topic over at the Central Time Facebook page.